Live local talk. It's Tesh Matters on the voice of the Tesh. Kane Radio, New Iberia's only daily live call-in talk show.
23 minutes after 10 o'clock, our Mellow Joy Coffee Time on Thursdays. My pleasure to welcome back Positively Iberia's Marty Harrell and a couple of other guests we'll introduce in just a moment. Marty, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, sir. You know, we're celebrating Black History Month today. Back in August, Positively Iberia was proud to celebrate National Black Business Month with a month-long series of panels featuring local Black business owners whose companies have a major impact on our local economy. So we certainly would be remiss in our commitment to sharing all things positive about Iberia Parish if we didn't acknowledge our local historical families and figures during Black History Month. And as part of the celebration, and before we meet our very special guest, I thought it would be important to give a little bit of background on Black History Month. As the name implies, Black History Month is an annual celebration of achievements by African Americans and a time for recognizing their role in U.S. history. Also known as African American History Month, the event grew out of Negro History Week, the brainchild of a noted historian, Carter G. Woodson, and other prominent African Americans. The story of Black History Month begins in 1915, wow, half a century after the 13th Amendment abolished slavery in the United States. That September, the Harvard-trained Carter G. Woodson and a prominent minister, Jesse E. Moreland, founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, an organization dedicated to researching and promoting achievements by Black Americans and other peoples of African descent. Now, known today as the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, the group sponsored a National Negro History Week in 1926, choosing the second week of February to coincide with the birthdays of U.S. President Abraham Lincoln, February 12th, and social reformer, abolitionist, and statesman Frederick Douglass, February 20th. In the decades that followed, mayors of cities across the country began issuing yearly proclamations recognizing Negro History Week. And thanks to the Civil Rights Movement, by the late 1960s, Negro History Week had evolved into Black History Month on many college campuses. In 1976, then President Gerald Ford officially recognized Black History Month, calling upon the public to, quote, seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishments of Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history, end quote. Since then, every U.S. president has officially designated the month of February as Black History Month, and other countries around the world, including Canada and the United Kingdom, also devote a month to celebrating Black history. Now, today, we're going to bring our history right here to home. I'd like to say hello to our special guest, Dr. Phoebe Hayes. Welcome, Dr. Hayes.
Well, thank you, Marty. I'm so happy that I received this invitation. Very happy to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. And just so everyone will know, Janet's maybe in our screen, but she's just monitoring today. So I didn't want anybody to look at it and go, well, where the heck and why didn't Janet say anything?
I keep waiting for her to blink. I've been looking at that. Blink, Janet!
No. But she's there. She just was here to bring a happy face to Phoebe and since we had not met. So that was a good thing.
She's a good friend.
Absolutely. And a reminder, if our listeners would like to peek behind the curtain, we're recording this Zoom panel, so you can check the Positively Iberia Facebook page later today and see us on the radio. Now, before I turn the floor over to Dr. Hayes, and in the interest of time, I'll share some of her credentials, but this is the tip of the iceberg, folks. you could. We're going to post her bio in its entirety in case you missed it. Post later today, but here's a few things you need to know before we get started. Dr. Hayes is a native and lifelong resident of Iberia Parish and a descendant of West African enslaved peoples on area plantations during the antebellum period. Her elementary and secondary education was completed in the segregated public schools of Iberia Parish. She was a member of the last freshman class, which was 68-69, of the historic all-black Jonas Henderson Senior High School, which closed due to forced desegregation, easy for me to say, of the public schools in Iberia Parish, and graduated from New Iberia Senior High in 1972. Her undergraduate degrees, plural, include speech pathology and audiology from Xavier University of New Orleans, and a second baccalaureate degree in speech and pathology and audiology from the College of Education at USL, now, of course, known as University of Louisiana at Lafayette, a master's degree in communicative disorders, USL, in 1982, and in 1993 earned her PhD in communication sciences and disorders from Louisiana State University, LSU, Baton Rouge. Prior to her university teaching, Dr. Hayes worked in the Iberia Parish school system for 10 years as a speech therapist and served as master therapist of the speech therapy staff her final year in the school system here. At UL Lafayette, she achieved the rank of professor in the Department of Communication Services and Disorders and served as dean of the College of General Studies from 1998 to her retirement after 25 years of service in 2013. Following retirement from university work, Dr. Hayes has used her research skills to explore her own family history, and that research has led her to discover evidence of the true story of blacks who lived in Iberia Parish from Reconstruction to the end of the Jim Crow era of segregation, some of which we'll talk about today. In the spring of 2017, Dr. Hayes founded the Iberia African American Historical Society for the purpose of researching, disseminating, preserving, and commemorating the history of African Americans in Iberia Parish. She is a highly sought after, we're going to say, passionate historian, author, and presenter, and we are honored to have her with us here today. The phone lines will be open for questions, and Jeff, if you would be screened for us, if we have time, we'll give those questions to Dr. Hayes along the way. So you can call 367-1240 if you have any questions as we're visiting today. So, Phoebe, let's get started. Did I get most of it right?
Most of it. I hesitate at calling myself a historian because I have such wonderful colleagues here at the University of Louisiana, Southern University, you know, at LSU, all over, who I can rely on to just fact check. You know, there are things I'm finding. I want to make sure that the research is sound and that what I'm finding is good enough, important enough for me to share. Accurate right. enough. So my daughter-in-law is a PhD in history from SUNY Binghamton, New York. And I'm always so amazed at the work that those professionals have to put in to earn those degrees. I never want to assume that this is something I can take on as a hobby and be as good as they are. So having said all of that, I love local history. I love Iberia Parish. Always have. This is my home. This is the place that I that God situated me in. My family are Iberians, as you mentioned. Most of my ancestors were enslaved on plantations in this area. It wasn't Iberia then, but it may have been St. Mary or St. Martin. But I can track my family. So my motivation for doing what I do is, one, I have all this training, you know, in terms of research, in terms of scholarship, making sure that I'm accurate as I can be in terms of writing, and I want to share the information I've been uncovering my research of African-American history in this area. I have I'm not going to call it a pet peeve, but I have a concern.
Okay.
So many of our, not with you, Marty, you're wonderful.
thank you.
So many of, it's more in terms of the way society views public history or views history. History, we have so many outstanding, wonderful contributors to the history of this country, people who are African-American. And if you ask children, you know, who are your heroes? Who are the African-American heroes? And they're going to say immediately, Dr. King, Sojourner Truth, Rosa Parks, etc. But they don't know their local history. They don't know who those African-Americans were in Iberia Parish and surrounding communities that we also should be honoring.
Absolutely.
And by the way, they may also be related to those people, which is so incredibly empowering to me. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right,
so
yeah.
My concern is that I want people, families, and especially children, and I mean Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. We all need to understand who the people were that came to this area and contributed to this community developing. And we need to honor their histories. So when people talk about, I stumbled upon Dr. Emma Wakefield Paye, whose marker is directly across from the radio station. That's intentional. I wanted her marker to be placed in the historic district. And I do know that we have, a marker dedicated to another African-American, Felicite. My only concern is I'm not so sure what is factual in the telling of her story. And no one can prove or disprove anything at this point. But it's important to me that we also look beyond and see who else we have in this community to honor. So we have Dr. Emma Wakefield, and her story is so compelling, but the story of her family is so compelling. And I didn't want just to hold this information to myself. I didn't know that we had a Black state senator during Reconstruction. And it's probably because I didn't really understand the Reconstruction period in the United States and how it played out in what became Iberia Parish, right?
Right,
so we
exactly.
So Dr. Wakefield's father, Samuel Wakefield, who was extremely influential in the Republican Party of the day, became a senator. He represented Iberia Parish in the state Senate. He also was our first postmaster.
Mm. Really?
Right? Yes, he was our postmaster. And his son, Adolph, was our first and to date only African-American clerk of court. Now, as
wow.
I said, I grew up in this community. And I even remember, I think it's seventh grade, I remember us covering a chapter on Iberia Parish history. And I was so excited because I wanted to know more. But it was more about, the content was more about the mayor's council, how city government is structured, parish government, etc. It really
right.
wasn't history. And
it was more civics than history.
That's exactly right.
But
it did get to a little history.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the history of when the Acadians came and when the Spaniards came,
mm-hmm.
which is part of our history.
Exactly.
But the Africans were here before both groups, right?
Right.
Because Andre Mas came and he brought Africans with him. And they were enslaved. But he went back to Europe for years. And when he returned, they were still there running the vacherie. They had married into some of the native tribes. And descendants of that group of Africans still reside in our community. I like to think I'm one of them, but I can't prove it just yet.
but you're looking, right?
If I come across it, I'll share it.
Oh,
but,
good.
But my point is, history is inclusive. Only man separates. Jim Crow is over. That Jim Crow period was about separating people. And even in the books that were written at the time, they kept groups separated. I went to the library, and among other books that I found books on the veterans of Iberia Parish. And every veteran's book excluded the African-American soldiers. And I come from a long line of veterans dating back to the Civil War.
Tell us about that. That was in your bio that you sent me. Tell us about the your veterans.
Yes, I have several of my ancestral grandparents and my father mm-hmm. who were veterans of conflicts in this country, beginning with the Civil War. And those young men, I'm going to call, because they were young men. I'll start with the Civil War. Mm-hmm. I have my two times great grandfather, Alphonse Manuel, as an example. He was on the plantation of Eugene Henry Ouellette, and he came by way of Clara Ouellette or the Dequeers. So you have to understand your history, how people kind of moved around the parish. And when the soldiers came, when the Union soldiers came to Iberia Parish, like many of the Africans who were enslaved at that time, they walked off those plantations and they followed the Union Army to their next, wherever they were going to next.
Next
and
encampment,
The encampments were in history, they referred to as contraband camps, because that's where the Africans or the former slaves, that's where they settled with the soldiers. My mm-hmm. grandfathers, there are at least four or five of them that I have been able to track to Morgan City. When they went to what was called Bashir City, and it's now Morgan City, mm-hmm. they enlisted. I have one of my other grandfathers enlisted in the Union Army, the Union Navy, as an 11 or 12 year old.
Wow.
And all these men got their pensions. I know all of this because I pulled their pension records.
Wow.
Which was so incredibly interesting and informative, educational. Most of my grandfathers fought at Port Hudson on the way to New Orleans.
North of Baton Rouge, isn't
yes.
that where Port Hudson
yes.
is? Yeah, okay.
That's exactly right. Before they went to Port Hudson, they were on guard duty at Ship Island, and then mm-hmm. they were sent to Port Hudson. And finally, they were mustered out after the battle at Port Hudson. So the stories that that I've learned from getting these primary documents, these records, they're so exciting. And I keep thinking, I shouldn't just keep this to myself. And the whole community needs to be reminded of the history, the involvement of the African Americans in the formation of this community. Because those men brought their families back to Iberia. And as veterans, they bought land, they settled, they formed historically black communities that we know now as the Necotown area, mm-hmm. the African-American community of Marbahan, Olivia, Freetown, etc. And they prospered.
And finding mm-hmm. all of this information, is that what gave you, and the passion to share it, is that what gave you or motivated you to establishing the African American Historical Society? Is that how that all
the fire burnt? The fire that caused me to do this was the fact that I saw those Jim Crow texts that excluded my people. Mm. And I knew this wasn't right. And I also understood that people were being undereducated, right? And forming opinions based on no information, very poor information. So I wanted to form this organization. For example, Deidre Ledbetter, one of our consul people, she has an uncle who was the first casualty of World War II, Stephen George Norman. And when I came across that, it was like incredible. His record is not in those books that I found.
Wow.
The physicians of Iberia Parish, there's at least one book that's still there in the library that documents the history of the physicians of Iberia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all white. At least one is not, but I don't think they knew that. But they were all white. And I've documented so far over 20 African-American physicians associated with our parish. Now, they didn't all practice here. I think about 15 practiced. Mm-hmm. But starting with Dr. Wakefield, who finished her degree in 1897, she never practiced here, right?
Right.
But her cousin, Carlos J. Vital, was the first black physician of Iberia Parish, of the Vital, the Lauraville and Morbahan Vital family.
Right.
His sister-in-law, Dr. Margaret Vital, was the first black woman physician to actually practice here.
And these are all things that have just been...
You have to just research, uncover it, and teach it. And then you commemorate that history.
Right.
So people don't ever forget again. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I grew up hearing that the first black school was Howe Institute. Not true.
Oh.
Howe was one of the early black schools in Iberia. There was a black public school called Douglas Institute. And it later became ITPS, the Iberia Training School. And Sam Wakefield, Dr. Emma Wakefield's father, in 1873 probably, he built a school, a two-story school named Wakefield Institute on Bank Street. A tornado hit New Iberia in 1874 and destroyed it before it ever opened.
Oh, my goodness.
But he had put out a call for faculty and students. It would have been a private prep school to compete with a Howe Institute, which came much later, about 10 years later, maybe 15 years later, right?
Yeah.
So, again, to me, a lot of this history is too exciting and incredible that I wouldn't try to find a way to share it. And sharing it just with me, talking about it, that's not the way to go. I really don't want this history to be associated with one person. That's why I founded the organization, made up of a board of very bright people, people who have been, many of them, involved in uncovering history in this parish for a long time, right? Like Michael Bell with the Félicité Historic Society. Sandra Eglin was the first one to attempt to write the history in Glenn Conrad's book, right? So I wanted to involve people like them who have been doing this work for a long time, one, out of respect, and also because out of appreciation for the work that they have done. And we have university professors who are on our board. We have now an advisory board that consists of specialists or professionals in history.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That step in and help.
Well, we can go to whenever, especially since I do a lot of the research. If I have some questions about something, if the documentation is there, then I don't really need to go to anyone because, you know, primary records are primary records. They are documents that we can find. But sometimes conclusions that I want to or I attempt to draw, I need to make sure that I'm correct. So we have wonderful, wonderful colleagues at the universities that we can rely on.
One of the talking points that you shared with me in advance of this was talking about the 1944 activities.
Expulsions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Though that's not the most positive thing. I think that is something that people should know more about.
Yes.
And you talked about things happening in your lifetime, and you and I are fairly close in age. This wasn't long before we were born.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that happened, what we would consider mid-20th
century.
It's
a generation ago.
Yes.
Because it's the lifetime of my parents and grandparents, et cetera. And that's how I grew up, which most African-Americans in this community, by the way, they have grown up hearing the stories of the black doctors, Dr. Dorsey, Dr. Scoggins, Dr. Williams, Dr. Pearson. I've heard those names all my life. And yeah, it was an interesting story. No one really could tell me why those doctors were beaten, some of them, and then thrown out of Iberia Parish until I started doing the research. And actually, I took a class that two young professors from UL taught at the library as part of humanities series.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually gave us readings, which included a documentation of the case involving the expulsion of the doctors. The doctors were beaten. This is Jim Crow.
Right.
When people were separated and everyone was taught, you have your place here, you have your place here. If you dare to get out of that place, then there are going to be consequences. They enforced it through violence. Well, when there were African-American men who wanted to become welders, right? Because they wanted to, what were black men? Look at the census records of the time. If you look at most black families, the fathers were field hands or laborers.
Mm-hmm.
If the mothers worked out of the home, they worked in women, white women's kitchens.
They were domestics. Yeah.
Or the fathers were yard men, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
When is the last time that anyone could argue and tell me that someone can lift their family up to the middle class with those kinds of jobs?
Right. So it was about wanting more skills. Yeah.
These men wanted, it was about them wanting to take part in the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the opportunity to lift their families up to the middle class also. Now, that had begun to happen, okay, in the white community because the oil and gas industry opened up, right?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know anything about the oil and gas industry until I was in high school when I went to school with my white friends and they talked about their dads going seven on, seven off. That wasn't part of my framework.
Right.
But in 1944, those men wanted to get training as welders, skilled. They wanted to become skilled workers.
Right.
And
they were direly needed at that particular time in the industry as well, those skilled workers.
They were, but there was an effort to make sure that black men were not allowed access to those kinds of jobs, right?
Right.
So that was, the problem. And people, the powers that be at the time, who had a vested interest in making sure that Jim Crow laws continued, they fought against it. Mm-hmm. They expelled the doctors who brought in the NAACP because that really opened up all types of anger and what have you. So they fought against it. And so let's see, 1944 until what? The late 60s when it became fairly, common for black men to go into the oil and gas industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, 20-something years?
Wow.
So what that did, and that's the point of the Historical Society. It's not just the research. It's for us to understand where we are and how we got to where we are. Half the population was denied access to the middle class. Do you know what that would have meant to those merchants in town?
Yeah. And speaking of our...
Another 50% who could afford their goods.
Right. And speaking of merchants, you mentioned something about how that we're beginning to see a resurgence in the downtown historical district of black-owned businesses. But you said this is just the return because you found so many active black-owned businesses in your history.
That's right. If you go to the Sanborn maps, just as an example, if you go to the Sanborn maps that are they're online. I was about to tell you, go to the court, the clerk of court's office, but they're online. You will find maps that will show you they will be identified as black-owned businesses in the historic district. So, for example, on Week Street, I think there was a black restaurant. I know Sandra Eglin's mother, grandparents owned a restaurant on Hopkins Street at that block near Main, and it's there. Near the Episcopal Church, there are newspaper articles that about the black businesses that were on Main Street, around wherever the water company is now. And I haven't exactly located those, but there are references to those businesses.
Because so many people...
I think Julia Street, St. Peter Street had them, et cetera. It wasn't until after, later on, that people were relegated to just Hopkins Street, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's interesting that you said earlier, too, that most people think of the Biscuit Lady...
Yeah,
as the first,
Helen Johnson.
Yeah, of being the first black business on Main Street. But no, there were many, many, many before.
And that's because our memory fades, which is intentional when it came to Jim Crow. And especially when those businesses were forced off of Main Street. And this happened as a result, some of them as a result of a lynching. That are a couple of lynchings that occurred in the community. And it's important, as you said, history is history. And if we fear looking at it, then we will never become the community that we should become, because we shouldn't be afraid to look at ourselves and resolve to do better.
Yeah, right, wrong, or indifferent. Right? We need to understand more than anything.
You know, a friend said, well, I'm glad things like this didn't happen in New Iberia. And I'm going, we were a former Jim Crow community. Of course they happened. How else were they going to enforce Jim Crow laws? Yeah. They don't happen anymore, thank God. You know, but people have to understand there are still impacts from that history that are still being felt. And it's manifested in poverty.
Before we go any further, I need to check in with Jeff. Are we on good on time, Jeff? Can we go over a little bit?
Absolutely. We're I'd say till about 7 after. We're good.
Okay. I noticed that we're getting close to 5 minutes to the hour, and I wanted to make sure we were on time.
Phoebe, and I apologize. I can get so
no
excited
worries.
About this history.
No worries. That's one of the reasons why I'm glad we're on this particular Thursday, because sometimes we do have a little wiggle room some Thursdays, and I thought this might be one of them. Well, I also let's wrap this up with, let's talk about the African American men of Iberia Parish that served in the military. We talked about the veterans of the Civil War, but I found we have some interesting statistics about World War One. You know, World War One has been in our thoughts and minds this year because of the Spanish flu pandemic of 1917 to 1919. But you uncovered an interesting Iberia Parish fact about World War One. I saw.
Yes. The young man who I mentioned was listed as the first casualty in Iberia, and that was a newspaper title. Stephen George Norman, Mrs. Ledbetter's ancestor, he died of the flu. There were so many, and those young men who were sent overseas, like to France, where Stephen, I think, died, they were crammed into these camps.
And foxholes,
and the flu spread like wildfire.
Yeah,
and his family, you know, he died. He was listed as a casualty of the war, you know.
And we have some women of note from World War II, right?
And I just found this out thanks to, I think, Michael Bell and, you know, he and I think Sandra Eglin, some of the others on the committee led me to go in and research their history. The Vital family sent three women, three of their daughters. And
you
I'm
know
saying
what?
They sent them, but I found out that we have three women who were WACs, and in World War II, and I didn't know of any African American women in World War I, World War II.
So since they were WACs, they were in the air. We will refer to it as the Air Force, though the Air Force wasn't actually formed at that time.
Brave
Do you
women.
Know if they were pilots?
No, I don't. I know very little about them. I'm going to have to get their pension records, but I've pulled what's available online. I've spoken to family members. Dr. Carlos J. Vital, who himself is a physician, a young man in Houston, Texas, gave me some background information on them. He is his uncle, old Dr. Carlos Vital, who was the first Black doctor in Iberia to provide services. Mm-hmm. That was his father, his grandfather's brother.
Wow.
So this, the Vital family to me is a significant family. I understand. I think that, and I haven't documented it yet, that at least one of them is buried. One of the ladies is buried in St. Edward's Catholic Church Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Dr. Vital, old doctor, just because I'm trying to distinguish, because when he died, he was only 42. But he and his family are buried at St. Peter's. That's another thing. A lot of people aren't aware that there are Black families buried in St. Peter. Like, I have members of my family there because they were all Roman Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And they were members of St. Peter before the St. Edward Parish was built.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes. It's very interesting. Well, we'll get back to you in a moment, but I want to go ahead and get a couple of announcements in.
Yes.
Just I know we have one more thing we want to talk about.
Remind me to tell you about Janaret because I keep forgetting.
Okay, well, we're good. Well, that first announcement is a celebration of Black History Month honoring the living will honor citizens who have and are contributing to Black history in the city of Janaret. Honorees include many African-American firsts, including Iberia Parish President M. Larry Richard, former mayors James T.K. Alexander and April Falcord, former alderman Laura Brown, city marshal Furnace Martin, James Wallace and Terry Thompson of the Janaret Chamber, businesswoman Lavita Collins, and Mayor Carol Bourgeois, who is being honored as Janaret's first Black aviator. I'm sure there's a story there, but we'll get into that. He was on our show last week. He and Terry, in fact, were last week. Janaret United and the Janaret Chamber of Commerce and Janaret Youth Athletic Association and New Push Chapter are collaborating with the King Joseph Recreation Center to put this event on this Saturday, February 27th from 1 to 3 at the King Joseph Rec Center. You can call for more information to 337-420-3864 or 337-241-1972. You want to insert your little thing about Janaret?
Yeah, because
right
a lot of people do not know that Janaret has, so far, I found two African-American physicians associated with Janaret. Dr. Moses Frazier, who was actually born in New Orleans, but as an infant, the family moved to Janaret. And he graduated, he had, I think, 3 degrees in chiropractics, but also law and then medicine.
Wow.
From Harvard and Columbia.
Wow. Oh,
and
my
he died in Germany. But he practiced, you know, he was an international physician, but an attorney. But he was a scholar.
Wow.
Know? And it's so important to me that kids know who these people are in their communities. And then there was a Dr. Barabin. And Dr. Barabin, James Barabin, his niece is one of the women that desegregated USL.
Is that the one that passed away this week?
No, someone else?
Okay.
Someone else. She was a Constantine. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing a story for our journal because that's another thing we do. We produce, publish an annual journal on our history.
Oh, good.
And, so it's important for the kids in Janaret to know that they come also from great people.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I get frustrated with, because I hear young kids calling their heroes, not that our athletes are not important. They certainly are, but that's their hero and that's what they aspire to be. And we all know that the capacity for greatness is in so many other areas other than just sports. So that's
right.
But that's
what they know, though, Marty.
Right, so, exactly. So we just have to be.
We need to give them other information.
Exactly. Okay. One other little quick comment. Troy Rue, who was guest on the February 11th, the Mardi Gras segment, advised us that the Ranch Sorting Association event that was originally scheduled for last Saturday was postponed due to winter storm damage at the Sugarina. They're attempting to reschedule that for March the 6th. So as soon as we get a update on that, I'll certainly make sure to get it out. Next week, we'll kick off the month of March with details on a full month of activities at the Shadows on the Tesh, from the semi-annual arts and crafts show to a week of plein air activities and wrapping up with a new event. So Jade Buto and her band of volunteers will be here to tell us about it. And I know, Phoebe, you have a comment about your collaboration.
Quick, yes. The National Trust for Historic Preservation, which owns the Shadows, we've been working with them as far as reinterpreting the history of the Shadows. So it too becomes inclusive, because you can't have a building an institution like the Shadows and the affiliated plantations of the Weeks family without understanding that there were other people on that plantation. So the Weeks family had 360 people who were enslaved. We're also going to expand the story so people understand their story.
Wow.
And the trust has invited us very graciously to take up residency on the second floor. We are partnering with the University of Louisiana Public History Department and the UL Public History Gilbo Center. And we are looking at, I'm going to say transforming, but that's probably not the word I want to use, but making the Shadows Visitor Center on that second floor an educational resource research center. So
wow.
People of the community yeah. can come. They can look at, we're going to get documents through that collaboration, the pension records of African-American soldiers of the Civil War. We will have housed there so people can go and research their people's history.
Yeah, in fact, so, I was going to ask at some point where folks can get a lot of this information you have offered up, whether it's online or a brick-and-mortar situation.
Thank you, Jeff. We have been teaching through events, in-person events, since we've started, but it's not enough. We also have to write that history up. So we have our journal that comes out, and we have members that pay the $20 a year to help us continue our work, and they get the journal free. But we also have opportunities for people to come, and if someone says that they want some help or they have questions about that history, they contact me, and I share that information. I meet them and do what is needed to share the information with them.
We're going to place a link to the Society's website in case you missed it, posting mm-hmm. after the show, so people will be able to go there, which has all of the information and how to contact everyone on the board. And I've wandered the halls of your website. There's lots of great information there, and I'm going to be a brand new member, so
thank
I can
you.
Do my research there, because there's so much to learn. I'm really excited about that.
And we're writing books, you know. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's Margaret Simon and I are writing a book about Dr. Wakefield, hopefully with the University of Louisiana as the publisher.
We will get you and Margaret back when the book's ready, for
That's
sure.
exactly right. Thank
okay.
you.
And, of course, you can always find out what's coming up on our programming and other announcements, too, by giving our Positively Iberia Facebook page a like and follow. And don't forget to tune in to News 15, our TV promotional partner, and catch Positively Iberia spots. And if you have a story idea that you'd care to share, let us know. Call 337-352-2892. Before we go, thanks again to our very special guest, Dr. Phoebe Hayes, and educator. I still call you a historian, Phoebe. You are my historian as far as Iberia is concerned. And founder of the Iberia African American Historical Society. Positively Iberia is produced by the Greater Iberia Chamber of Commerce, again, easy for me to say, in cooperation with Tesh Matters here on Kane 107.5 FM and AM 1240 and KADN KLAF News 15. Later today, we'll share an In Case You Missed It post with the video of today's Zoom panel and links to things we mentioned today and a reminder of how to visit the archive of the audio segments on Kane1240.com, where you can replay anytime. Once again, we'd especially like to thank our underwriter, the First National Bank of Deseret, and of course our radio listeners, Facebook followers, and group members. Stay safe and well, y'all. Get the vaccine when you can, wear your mask, and remember to shop local, because it matters, and it's only getting better.